This is an ABC podcast. Can you be more specific? On ABC Radio Australia.
Whakalofala hiatu and welcome to Can You Be More Pacific. I'm Dean Halatau and as always I'm joined by my awesome co-host Sarah Ngama. Hello Sarah.
Hello Dean and Bulavinaka to all of our listeners. We are back for another week of this amazing show. Coming up in the next hour we take a look back at the weekend in sport. We have an interview with Henry Pettinara and we have a new question for our favourite segment, You Can Ask That. So there's plenty to get through in the next hour, but first, Dean, how was your week?
Week's been busy and good. I went over to Perth for the second Origin. So that was like a bit of a quick hit. I flew in on Sunday morning, flew out Monday morning. So it was kind of rushed. I didn't really see anything other
than... Did you get the red eye flight?
No. I came back in the morning like at 11 o'clock. So it was a nice exit from Perth.
Must be nice.
Yeah. Very lucky and very grateful to be able to get that. And Pacific Tests on Friday. It was rep weekend in rugby league. So I was lucky enough to beat a lot of games. And... yeah, it was awesome. Loved watching the Pacific Test, actually. They were always lots of fun, lots of culture, and lots of atmosphere. So that was great. How about you, Sarah? What have you been up to?
My week has been quite busy. I actually did something really cool last week. I was asked to MC an event at the Australian Museum, and the exhibition was called One Soul Moana, and it was a celebration of all the Pacifica cultures here in Sydney. So it was great to see the likes of Matavai and different Kapahaka groups come through and share their culture through song, dance, and just sharing with us, really. And it was really special to be a part of it because I haven't really experienced anything like that, but the Pacifica culture here in Sydney is very much alive, and it was great to witness firsthand.
Oh, it is very much alive. We've seen that, as I mentioned, on Saturday night, and well done, Sarah, getting out amongst it and MC extraordinaire.
Just try my best. On the note of you going to Perth, there's so much happening in Perth because this week it is the Wallabies versus England test, the first of it. So Perth is thriving right now on the sporting scene.
Yeah, it's great that after obviously a couple of years where they were pretty tight on letting people in and out of the state,
true,
they now have an opportunity to showcase some international sport and obviously rugby league last weekend. Well done, Perth.
Continuing on with the good news, our top story this week comes from Sydney Roosters captain and New South Wales Origin player Corbin Baxter.
Yes, Corbin. Now, we made a point of last week her not being selected to play in the Origin match on Friday night. Foot in mouth, take it out, because Corbin's actually pregnant and it's awesome news. She's a legend of a person, and congratulations to Corbin, her partner Maddie, and her son Carter, who extend their family and add a fourth.
Yes, she's very much respected throughout the game, and it's really exciting news for her. I enjoyed the piece that the NRL released and, you know, what she had to say about female athletes, you know, kind of worrying about the time that they want to have kids, etc. But she's like, you know, I had aspirations to play at the World Cup, but God had other plans, and I'm not putting any pressure on myself. If next year comes around and I'm fit to play, I will play. But, you know, we know Corbin and she's an amazing human. We wish her and her family all the best.
We certainly do. Now, the Pacific mini games wrapped up over the weekend and the final medal tally looks like this. PNG finished with 80 in total, 33 gold, 28 silver, 19 bronze. Tahiti was the next best with 58 total, 22 gold, I should say, 15 silver and 21 bronze. So some pretty hefty medal tallies from those two nations.
Yes, and not forgetting Northern Mariana Islands, they finished with 38 medals in total, 16 gold, 13 silver and 9 bronze. These are some big numbers.
Big numbers, well done, particularly on the host for achieving that, 38 medals in total. And no doubt all the athletes got plenty out of it in terms of preparation for Comm Games.
Yeah, definitely. And PNG, they did so, so well. Tallying 80 is a huge number, and they are hosting the next Pacific Games, and they hope to up that number even further. So watch this space. They could hit three digits.
Yes, I've got no doubt that they'll.
They can. I'm not kidding. They absolutely can with numbers like that.
Huge. Now, your code, the Ocean of Rugby Sevens, was taking place in New Zealand.
Yes, the Oceania Rugby Sevens tournament took place over the weekend in Auckland, and it was a pretty exciting tournament. The Black Ferns, they actually inserted two teams into the competition, Black Fern Sevens Pango and Black Fern Sevens Ma. The latter won all four games, securing themselves the title.
Yeah, well done to Black Ferns Ma. And they weren't, it wasn't like they coasted through. They had some pretty tight matches. What a performance from one team to go all the way through undefeated.
Yeah, it's pretty impressive. On the note of success, the New Zealand men also had a dominant performance throughout the tournament. They won all of their games, but on the last day went down to Fiji.
Yes, it was a strong outing again from the New Zealand men's side. the one loss to Fiji. They did beat them earlier in the week, so it was one for one, I guess, between those two, but they finished out on top on countback and points.
Now on to the 15s format of the game. The Māori All Blacks took on Ireland on Wednesday and defeated them 32-17.
Yeah, it was really impressive from the Māori All Blacks. They tend to put up good performances, and against a world-class side in Ireland is again, really impressive.
Yes, it is. I do want to make mention of Brad Webber and TJ Perenara, who did share the All Black captaincy duties. And also NZ-born Bundy Aki, he was the captain for Ireland, which was really cool because he's of Pacifica heritage.
Yes, well done to Bundy too. He would have got a lot of joy out of captaining against the Māori All Blacks. That would have been a fairly special moment for
him. One for the pool room.
Yes, one for the pool room indeed. Now over to the other code. NRL was in rep round last weekend. There was a series of matches played across the week. It was actually really enjoyable football. I think every game was well watched, well supported. It kicked off on Thursday at Leichhardt, the under-19s men's and women's State of Origin sides went up against each other. Blues clean sweep on that night. And then Friday we went down to Canberra, the nation's capital, for the women's State of Origin, where New South Wales took out the win and the series for this year, 20-14 against Queensland, which was a really great game of football to watch. It was no doubt pretty cold down there, but the quality of rugby league that was played was really impressive. Isabel Kelly was the player of the match for the Blues. She scored, I'd say, the winning try she scored for the Blues, but some really strong performances across the park. Shout out to Samaiva Taufa. She was unreal, as she always is. I think she played maybe the full game or close to it and just knocked up some huge numbers.
Yeah, she is a powerhouse through the middle. The crowd numbers reached 11,321, which is record attendance. And to think that they've taken the game to a completely new location and a state like ACT, where it's just not typically played, it tells us that the game is trending in the right direction.
It certainly is. Now, over the ditch, and on Saturday there was four test matches played, the first being the Kiwi Ferns up against Matema'a Tonga. And this was a huge atmosphere, as we knew it was going to be, the first elite level rugby league to be played in New Zealand in 3 years, I think. So to get that first one being a test match, the Kiwi Ferns were really dominant. Matema'a Tonga's trying to establish themselves for World Cup, and it was, yeah, like I said, a really impressive performance from the Kiwi Ferns, 50-12. But midway through the second half, the Tongan team, they really started to show the passion they have for the jersey. The effort was there for the whole game. They got a couple of tries and the crowd erupted. It was so good to see them cross the line but get the support of the locals. And even though they were well beaten, it was really nice to see that level of support, and the crowd didn't really care what the scoreline was. It was just great to see their team being represented and just a sea of red everywhere.
So damn cool.
Later in that day, over in New Zealand, the New Zealand Kiwis took on Matema'a Tonga in the men's match, and the final score was 26-6. Now, that was a match that was built up pretty well. The Tongan team, their forward pack is so strong. They probably lacked a little bit in terms of experience in the halves, and that's where I think the Kiwis got the better of them. But really impressive performance from Joseph Manu. He ran for like 400 metres, which is a record, I believe, in international rugby league. And he was electric at the back. The Canberra Raiders, Jordan Rapana, he had a really strong game, and he finished off a try that went like this.
Peter Hicku, 10 short of halfway. Play to Rapana. Takes off to his left towards centre field. Then got the pass away. Fisher Harris quickly to Brown. Then to Kenny Bromwich on the left end. Takes on a moan. Sends it back on the inside to Dylan Brown. He's over the 30. Got a ball back to Rapana. And the Kiwis are in again. What a brilliant try from New Zealand.
The excitement in Maury's voice has me excited.
Yes, he does get very excited. I should have said that Jordan Rapana started and finished that try because he was off the ruck as he picked the ball up and continued his pretty good form, I would say, at the moment. So New Zealand 26-6 winners over Matema'a Tonga. Next, it was over to Campbelltown Stadium for the remaining Pacific tests. Samoa beat the Cook Islands 42-12. Again, a result that was probably expected, but midway through that second half, the Cook Islands really stood up. They must have had a good chat from their coach, Tony Ito, at halftime, just to sort of push them forward. They were outgunned, but their effort was really good. Tries to Talon May too. David Nafaluma scored four tries.
Okay, show off.
At Campbelltown. He scores a lot of tries at Campbelltown, but his fourth went like this.
Right to left they come. Harris to Vita. Can link up out wide with Talon May. He steps in field now. No real urgency here for Samoa. They have this game in their keeping. Josh Schuster steps across the line now. Makes half a break. He's up over halfway. needs some support, does he? Who is alongside him? Schuster still going, goes on the toe, outside of the boot for Norfoluma, who's in for try number four.
Four tries.
Yes, four tries.
He's meant to finish, and I'm not shocked by that, but how good to score that in a test match?
He was chasing five. They kept trying to go to him towards the last few minutes of the game because I think he wanted five, but wasn't able to do it. Josh Schuster, who we heard from, had a really good game for Samoa in his debut match, international football. Now, Sarah, the last match of the night for Pacific Tests on Saturday was PNG up against Fiji, and your bro Kev, captain, played 5/8, and it was a tough night for them, unfortunately.
Yes, they did fall short 24-14. I would say, though, Fiji did dominate in the first half, but in the second half, PNG really brought it to them and were able to close out the game. It was quite a different experience, I think, for myself and my family, indeed, to, one, watch Kevin, who was playing in the number 6 jersey, which is completely, completely not his, but also to see the new generation of players come through. Tito, who played in the number 1 jersey, I thought he was so, so impressive. He's coming through the ranks at Penrith Panthers. So you can see that they are blooding a new generation of players, and it's so vital in the lead-up to World Cup. But unfortunately, it wasn't for Fiji, but then the Kumuls put it over this.
Yeah, the Kumuls, they stayed... You know, they stayed on task. The second, look, midway through the first half, they came out pretty hard at Fiji, and they scored some really good tries. They showed that they got a fair bit of grit. Now they're able to play for the full 80 minutes. And, yeah, like you said, they took it to them. I thought Kev did a really good job with his kicks.
I think he did.
Yeah, like I was surprised. I thought that's where he might struggle a little bit, was with his kicking game, because he's just not used to doing all the time, but put up some really good kicks and played pretty controlled.
Put a grubber in and collected his own and crossed the white line, which was pretty cool. On Sunday morning, I actually caught up with him for breakfast, and I think he was in a bit of a dark place because his body was so sore. Oh. he got home at like 1 o'clock in the morning, and he's like, yeah, you know, I played test match, but my daughter Maya doesn't care. So it's... he was really happy, though, with, you know, what the boys put out there, and they know it's just all building blocks.
It is, and... One thing that you hear from anyone when they play against the Kumuls is that it is like they're hard men, and it's a
brick walls.
Always finish feeling very sore. And now one guy that's played for them for a long time is David Mead. He's got a lot of NRL experience, but he's represented PNG quite proudly, and he managed to cross in what is his last international game.
Five inside Fiji territory now. It comes to Lachlan Land here. Second last play with a break. Gets away from one. Pass back on the inside here. David Mead goes in to score. The captain, the retiring skipper, so loved by these Kumuls fans. They come from absolutely everywhere, his teammates, to celebrate David Mead.
What a legend.
Legend. Last match for PNG. Represented very proudly, as I said, on a number of occasions. And well done, David. Wish you all the best in international retirement. Not too sure what's happening with his NRL career yet, but great player David is.
Yeah, well said.
Now, the last match of the round was State of Origin 2 in the men's. New South Wales and Queensland went to Perth. It's a pretty awesome stadium over there. And the last time that they played there was really well supported. Pouring rain, New South Wales got a really important win. They were looking to go square the series up over there, and they did just that, 44 points to 12, which is a huge performance and a huge win for New South Wales to boost their confidence after game one. Brian To'o, who we love seeing in a blue jersey on the wing, crossed the line once again and had a powerful performance.
Five out from the Maroons line. Dummy half is Damien Cook. Spins it away left. Cleary away to Luai. Out the back, Burn, the lovely pass to Brian To'o. He's over to score. The Blues hit back against 12 Queenslanders.
Can finish.
Can finish, Brian. He's so strong.
He's so strong. And he's rocking a bit of a ratty at the moment too, isn't he?
Yeah, yeah.
I think it's all the power in the ratty.
Power in the ratty. Because he had long hair. He had the long hair last year. Well, the year before. Yeah, last year he had like the real sort of shaggy long hair.
Yeah.
Now he's added the ratty to his short hairdo.
He's not shy in that test arena.
How good was actually that? All the Penrith players are really good. Jerome Luai had a great game. Nathan Cleary, of course, was outstanding.
I love heart emoji eyes.
Love heart emoji eyes. Okay, yeah. He was really good. So it makes it a really great way to finish the series. Game three up in Brisbane, Lang Park. Looking forward to that one.
Yes.
Now, look, don't forget you can hear every game live on Radio Australia.
Talanoa time on Can You Be More Pacific?
joining us for Talanoa Time. We're very lucky to have Henry Perenara. He is a former NRL referee. He's a former NRL player, and he's an all-round good guy. I get to bump into Henry every now and then and hear what's going on. Henry, thanks for joining us on Can You Be More Pacific?
Very nice of you, Dino. How are you, mate?
Going very well, going very well. Now, before we get into it, do you want to give the listeners a little bit of background about yourself?
Yeah, oh, sweet. So, yeah, no, I grew up in New Zealand, grew up in Auckland. Family of six boys. I'm the eldest of six boys. Mum's half Samoan and dad's half Māori. So, yeah, obviously got some Samoan Māori heritage. And then, moved over here in 2000. Moved to Melbourne to play at the Storm. So, very lucky to play across five NRL clubs. And then moved into refereeing. And, recently retired from there last year. So that's the nice short story of that, mate.
You talk about moving from New Zealand to Australia. What was that initial change like for yourself, moving over as a youngster?
Scary. Yeah, that's probably the best way to say it. I never moved out of home. I was one of those island boys that never left home. I didn't want to leave because mum's cooking was so good, and I was very Preach. Appreciative of mum and dad. Yeah, they're getting older these days, so it was good. But yeah, moving to Melbourne was very, very scary. I ended up moving with a good friend of ours, Paul Fatuita. So the both of us, he
good
actually
man,
lived
fat.
With legend. So he actually moved with me. So he was living. He's from Wellington. He moved into my parents' house with me for a year when we were at the Warriors together. And then we both signed at Melbourne together. And to be fair, if it wasn't for Paulie, I would have probably turned around and come home after about 2 months, because it was just, obviously we had no family there. The only people we had were each other. So it was definitely an eye-opener.
You've had an extensive career in rugby league. How did it all start for you? Did you start playing when you were youngster or when you were a teenager?
Yeah, no, I grew up, I think I had 1 or 2 years of rugby, and the reason why...
Should have stayed.
I think it was just because we, it was very much where you live and what field's closest. So I played, I think, 1 or 2 years of suburbs rugby, and then went from there. We moved house and then moved to a club called Newland Stags. Tony Pulitou and Frankie, when they were living over there, they were probably the most famous boys from there. Even though they only went there for probably 1 or 2 years, Stags boys, they claim them. So, but yeah, no, I grew up in New Zealand and played rugby, played footy over there. And then pretty much went all the way through the system in New Zealand. And then, went through to the Warriors and then obviously around the NRL clubs.
When you're playing as a youngster, then moving into, like you say, into an elite system, what was that step up like for you?
It was hard, but it was something like... I mean, back in our day, like, I remember sitting in a room, I was 15, 16, making my first New Zealand team, and there was 90 to 100 kids from 15s to, say, 17s or 18s, and they were, like, the best kids in the country. And I remember a guy come up, and he turned around, and he goes, look to your left, look to your right. He goes, out of the three of you, which one is going to make it? Because there's only 3% that will.
Wow.
And you were just sitting there just going, holy shit, like... Oh, excuse my language. So then I was very much like, I went to the very first Warriors home game when they played the Broncos. Mum took us all, me and the boys. And I remember saying to Mum, I was like, I'm going to play for the Warriors when I was 15. And she was like I was pretty much like every other 15-year-old saying that. And Mum was very much like, yep, all good, son, all good. thinking that. But yeah, I was very, super dedicated and I guess moving into the professional level was like I really, really enjoyed it because I felt like that's something that I'd like, obviously really wanted to do for my whole life.
We've touched on your playing career. Now we want to explore a little bit more of your transition into refereeing. What inspired that decision?
Not much, to be honest. what happened was I had another shoulder reconstruction. That was my third shoulder reconstruction. I had also had an ankle reconstruction as well. So I was 27. And then I actually the year before, so I was at Cronulla. And the year before that, I was at Parramatta. And I actually went for a development officer job because I was looking, like I had a son who was sitting right next to me. We were just finishing at the gym. He was, probably 18 months. And after a game, I couldn't pick them up because my shoulders were so bad. So I couldn't pick them up for like 2 or 3 days. So that was like, as a young parent, that was obviously starting to affect me. And then I went for this job as a development officer for Western Sydney because it was at Para, and they actually gave it to somebody else. And the reason why they said that I didn't get the job was they couldn't understand why an NRL player would want to retire to do that, to do the job. So I was pretty peed about that because I was like, well, this is my decision. Like, I'm doing it for my, like, these are my reasons. And then when they didn't give it, I was like, so then I had a year, I had a contract to go to Cronulla. So I signed at Cronulla under Ricky Stewart. And then at the back end of the year, the NRL actually approached me to do the cadetship. And I didn't want to do it. I really didn't. But it was, ended up biting the bullet. And yeah, 14 years later, I honestly have to say it was probably the best decision I ever made.
Yeah, I've had a couple of conversations with you about this before, Henry, and you're really encouraging about, you know, former players taking the pathway into referee or officiating, I should say, because you did enjoy it so much, and you got your footy fix in a different kind of way. What was the experience like? You said it was the best decision you make, but what was that initial experience like becoming a elite level referee?
Yeah, like elite level is absolutely, it's unbelievable. I remember doing my debut and I was probably more nervous for my NRL referee debut than I was for my NRL playing debut. And it was just, I don't know if it was age, but it felt like every decision, like when you're a referee, you live every single decision. Whereas when you're a player, like you drop the ball and you just go, oh, damn it, blah, blah, blah. You kick the ground and throw stones or whatever. And then you're making another tackle, so you've pretty much forgotten about it. Whereas when you're a referee, because with the NRL, everything's so magnified, which obviously you've got to be like super in focus, you know, super drilled and stuff like that. So, but I'll tell you a funny story. Like my actual very, very first refereeing experience was out at Wayland Park, out of Penrith. And I refereed an under-15s game. And like I can't even remember the schools, but one school was getting towed up, like getting smoked. And then these boys, you could just see, they're just starting to crack it. And I was like, oh no, here we go. But the thing is, as a ref, you can't touch the players. It's just like a rule. You literally can't. And I wanted to get in between them and like just drag them, because a couple of island boys, I just wanted to grab them and just say, oh, pull your head in, like 14, 15 year old. You can't do that. So
how did you manage the situation?
I didn't. It just blew up in my face.
You're just a bystander to this brawl.
And I was sitting there, and I actually said, we had Steve Clark, who was a former referee. He retired to take over us, like look after us. And I just said to him, I was like, mate, all I wanted to do, I felt I could have stopped that straight away. I want to just grab the kid and just pushed him away and said, mate, that's it. Don't be stupid, you know. He couldn't even do that. And so, you know, this massive blue kicks off. At the end of the game, I had to call a game off. And the kid got suspended for 6 months.
Holy heck. You know,
like, and he to be fair, he deserved it. Absolutely deserved it. But, like, I was like, I could have stopped that by just grabbing him. But, you know, that was obviously a bit of a learning process. But that was my very first game as a ref.
Oh, God. One that would definitely stay in the memory bank.
I was like, holy shit.
Referees, they're not necessarily the most popular person on the field. You make decisions and, you know, some people will be happy with it and some won't. How do you manage or how do you keep your cool in those high-pressure moments?
A lot of practice. Yeah, it's hard and it's difficult, but I guess the biggest thing that, like, if I wish I learned so many different skills as a referee, I kind of wish I knew them as a player. I think I would have been a much better player. It's very, very difficult because, like, as a player, when you make a mistake and you're going to make a mistake, you kind of are able to move on super quickly. But the problem with a ref, like, if you drop the ball, as Daniel would know, like, you drop the ball, they show it once or twice, but then they move on. If you make a mistake as a referee, they show it, and then they show it again, and then they show it again. And then, like, the chances are the only reason that you see it is because there's 9 camera angles or minimum 9 camera angles every game.
Yeah.
So they show an angle from behind where, like, mate, you're not going to see it because you're not Superman and you don't see X-ray vision. But the issue is that, like, people kind of want perfection because of all of the things. So that's, yeah, it's it's pretty hard. You have to build up a fair bit of resilience. And obviously with so much media surrounding the game, you quickly learn to not read any papers or have social media.
Yeah, I get accused of being the boss of the referees union on this show because I always go to bat for you guys and, well, for your counterparts as well, because I get that. I get that you've got one set of eyes making a decision, well, and you've got your touches and all that, but there's things you're going to miss because you don't have X-ray vision, and everyone wants perfection, and anyone on the bad side of a call is always going to feel hard done by, but I've always got the referee's backs. Don't worry about that.
He really does.
He's the man, bro. He really he's does. The man. That's why he's the man.
Now, Henry, I mentioned obviously in the opener that you're a former referee. You've recently retired from the game, so you've had two transitions in your rugby league career, so to speak. What's your relationship like now that you're out of the game? What's it like with rugby league?
It's a lot better now. I think because I was involved with footy for so long, like I pretty much was in a full-time system since I was 17. So, you know, obviously being involved for that long is over 20 years, especially with refereeing, it started to take its toll on me. And there were things that I probably didn't enjoy and didn't like, and they started to, you know, probably affect me in ways that I didn't like it. And that was probably one of the big reasons why I ended up thinking, you know, now it's time for me to move on. You know, and now it's good because I guess probably the back end of last year, I really didn't enjoy some of the games. And whereas normally I'd be someone that would watch it a lot, but I guess when you're involved with it for so long, it starts becoming a job. And one of the reasons why I ended up walking away was because rugby league gave me so much, like it gave me everything. I didn't want to resent the game that gave me everything. So, because if I felt like if I lost love for it, I may not get it back. So, you know, that was one of the big decisions why I moved on, and, you know, super happy with the decision that I made.
That's such an honest insight. Thank you for sharing that with us, Henry. Before we let you go, we love to end on a light note with a segment called Tip On. It's basically 60 seconds of a rapid fire questions. Would you be down to play?
Yeah, give it a crack.
Yes. And the clock is on. What have you been reading, watching, or listening to lately?
The Hurt Locker is the book. Yeah.
A book, okay. Who is your sporting hero?
It was Steve Kearney when I was growing up.
Who was your most annoying teammate?
Oh, geez, Danny Williams was pretty bad.
What would be? Oh, yep. What would be your wrestler entrance song?
Oh, probably some 660 song.
Yes, I was listening to them this morning.
Yeah, they're amazing.
What was your favorite movie as a kid?
Home Alone.
What's something you could eat for a month straight?
Ice cream.
Favorite place you've travelled to?
Matatar, where I'm from.
Do you have a hidden talent?
I'm a closet geek.
Okay. Who would play you in the movie of your life?
Oh, jeez. Some banged up, washed up guy.
On a scale of 1 Can't to 10, be. 10 being the best, how good are you at keeping secrets?
9.
What was your first concert?
Venga Boys.
Venga no way. Boys. That's iconic.
I know that hidden talent, the numbers man. You're a numbers man, aren't you?
Yeah, well, you'd like to think that, but I actually I was involved in one of the most controversial games in refereeing. So I was involved in the 7 tackle refereeing game. So you'd think I'd be a bit better. Can't count to 6, but, you know, can add up numbers.
Love it.
Anyway, we all make mistakes.
You learn, don't you?
That's
you
right.
You learn.
Well, Henry, it's been awesome having you on the show. Thanks very much for your time, and we wish you all the best for whatever's next.
Cheers, guys. Appreciate it.
That was Henry Perinara, retired NRL player and NRL referee.
You can ask that. Your chance to ask what it's really like to be an elite athlete on Can You Be More Pacific?
It's time for our favourite segment, You Can Ask That. It's a segment where if you've got a question that you want to ask of a former or current athlete, please send it through to our DMs at Sarah Nangama or at Dean Hulletau on Instagram. And it's a question that you might have around what is it like being in the world of sport? And this week, We have a question from Dana on the Gold Coast, and the question is, what's the team camaraderie like? Do you see yourself as a family, and is it different between teams? So say between a club team and a rep team, for instance. Sarah.
This is a really good question.
Good question.
I feel like there's three questions in one, essentially. But I think I'll talk about, I guess, the difference of like club to state, because yep. I feel like that's the biggest jump. Genuinely, at Sydney Uni, that is the club I play for, there is a really strong culture there in terms of working really hard and working hard for one another. And we essentially do see ourselves as a family because we spend so much time together. Like, you literally bleed, sweat, cry, be deprived of sleep. And, you know, you do all of these things together as a family unit. And the stronger you are off field, and I'm sure you can speak to this also, the stronger you are on field. And there is a lot of effort that goes into it by the leadership group and coaches to get people in the room and to really build those off field relationships, because it does translate to success on the field. And on the note of success, like, we have won, I believe, 56 games on the trot at Sydney Uni. Like, we haven't lost. And so you look at that and you're like, well, then what do you put that down to? And it has to be how we are off field. And to be fair, it's been pretty crazy because in clubland, a lot of us Wallaroos girls are missing. There's about 15 of us that are involved in New South Wales Waratahs / Higher Honours Wallaroos. So we're missing from clubland, and it's these next gen girls that are coming through. But there are a few girls that have been there, still in the mix, and they really drive that to continue that, you know, that feel that we've worked so hard to create, which is to be like a family. That being said, there is always conflict. Like, there is always something that goes wrong. And it's just like a family unit. Some days you love each other, some days you can't stand each other. And then on the note of can't stand each other at the next level, which is at the New South Wales Waratahs, a lot of us, like, we spend so much time together. Like, I was just on tour with my friends for like 3 weeks, and it becomes hectic. Like, I love them, but I'm like, I literally wake up and I'm like, I wake up next to one of you, I go have breakfast, I train with you, we come home. Like, it's quite repetitive. And so the team camaraderie, I think, at that level is a little bit more tense because there is a lot more pressure. But it's crazy how it feels, because it feels very different at club, where it feels, you know, genuinely like family. But then you're coming up at the next level where it's a little bit tougher because it's competitive.
Yeah.
I don't know if that makes any sense.
No, that makes sense. I like the question too. I think to your points around like the different levels around when you're in club and then when you go up to rep, I found when I went into a rep side, it was you had to get to like know each other quickly. Like, even though you do know each other in a way, but when you start living in each other's pockets and going on tour, I did a couple of tours where it was like 6 weeks. So you do live in each other's pockets, and you wake up, your room is there, you go to breakfast and the rest of the team's there, then you train, then you go do social activities together. So you are in each other's pockets every day. But I always felt really relaxed in that environment because it was so different to what I was experiencing day to day at clubland in terms of the different types of people, a little bit of culture. And it was weird because you almost felt like a family without even spending time together previous to that. You just lob up in rep duties, and there's this real family feel, like we're here to represent our country. So that's a thing that binds us together straight away. And it was, I always really enjoyed it. At the club level, 100% understand what you mean. You sweat, you bleed, and you do everything. You train really hard together. When you train so hard that you're questioning why you're there in your own head, and you're looking next to you and there's someone doing the same thing, it forms a bond. Like, you go through some emotions like through that period, and you form a bond with that person. A lot of the training that you do that challenges you that way is to form bonds with the person next to you, knowing that they're doing the same thing, going through that level of effort in order to perform for your team, like in a tough competition. So, yeah, you build up really good bonds, and there's that camaraderie, and you become a family. So, like, there are differences at the different levels, but essentially the aim is the same, and that pulls you together, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. I think the closing note I want to say is that, like, each level demands, like, there are different levels of pressure as well. So I know when I come to clubland, I can just really enjoy myself, really enjoy my footy and laugh and, you know, just like kick back with my friends. And, you know, we're going to work really hard, but we can also have fun. Whereas I think the space that you're given to have fun and laugh when you're at the next level and you're at training, it's not like that at all. So you have to work just as hard off field to be able to create that fun and that vibe, so that when you come in, there's this mutual thing of like, okay, we're here, we're going to train, and, you know, and also on the note of like train, if you train really bad, I'm going to call you out because I love you and I know that you can be better. So it's there's differences, and I think it's because there's different pressures at different levels. But overall, like you said, the main goal is to be a family, and you are a family, and it's just as dysfunctional but functional like anyone else's.
I like that. Dysfunctional but functional.
Yeah. That's us. So, Dana, thank you so much for your question. And to all of our listeners, please feel free to hit us up on Instagram at Sarah Nangama or at Dean Halter. We'd love to hear from you.
Can you be more Pacific? On ABC Radio Australia. Oh, my God.
Woo! You're with Sarah and Dean talking all things sport across the Pacific.
Don't go anywhere. We've still got our favourite socials and we tackled the top headlines in the rock.
Time for a little change of pace as we head over to our favourite man on the ground in PNG, Peter Pasol.
I have a very special guest with me today. Her name is Christine Wamala-Uru. She's the Program Manager, Social Responsibility Just Play Program in partnership with OFC, that's the Oceania Football Confederation, and the PNG Football Association. Christine, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Peter.
All right, you're going to tell us a little bit about the Just Play program.
Just Play is a program funded by Oceania Football Confederation. This is a structured activity. It comes with a resource guide in Elton Wash and an evaluation booklet as well. The program is facilitated by the PNGFA instructors, football instructors, to the teachers and volunteers who then carry out the program activity to the children in the school.
So this is geared at getting kids in schools, young kids, primary school age, and also high school, I guess, interested in the sport?
Okay, Just Play is especially for the 6 to 12-year-old children. And it comes with a sport kit that they use to be learned at in sports, yeah.
So you go and teach, or at least you train people like volunteers. Can we include teachers and other people in the community that have contact with kids on a regular basis?
Yes, I think this program, especially for the schools, would be good for the education sports curriculum. It's an extra added sports curriculum which can be taught for the children for 6 to 12 years. And the program itself is more based on the Elton Wash Guide, which is the component for the child protection and safeguarding policy in those areas. Yeah.
All right. And the program was actually shelved for a couple of seasons. Just tell us a little bit about that.
Yes, the program was first introduced to PNGFA way back in 2011-12. It was implemented and going very well at that time, but probably due to the reporting purposes and challenges, the program was suspended by the donor funders. And because there was like a high demand interest by the schools in PNG, the donor funders, Oceania Football Confederation, decided to revive the program again with the recruitment of the Just Play manager.
Right,
and social responsibility, yes.
And what's the aim or the mission for this program? What does the program hope to achieve?
This is a mentoring program at the child level from 6 to 12 years, and more structured in football design activities. Yes, it can also mentor the children to have that interest in playing football in schools at the early age.
Just recently you had a training here in Moresby. You took some volunteers or some people. Tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, that's the first rollout of the Just Play program activity in the first training course where primary mainstream schools in NCD were identified. So the teachers attended the first training in order to get the program rollout in the respective schools.
And how did they find it? What was the feedback like?
Oh, the teachers were very excited. They wanted to get program activity, the structured activity, roll out again to the children in the schools.
Okay, so looking forward, what other plans does the Just Play program have? Are we going to be running more programs here in NCD only, or are we having it in other centres as well?
Okay, this is a pilot phase after getting back or reviving the Just Play program. So it will be rolled out in NCD for the first semester, which is 2022. Then after reporting back to the donors, OFC, then we plan to take it out to the other provinces.
Do you evaluate this program? And if so, what are the things that you look for that will tell you that this program is successful and is doing what it intended to do?
Yes, Just Play comes, like I said, with the resource kit. It has an evaluation booklet. The sessions are from 1 to 16. So each session has its own evaluation sheet where we have our M&E officer will work with the teachers to see how the children are participating in the program. Then we evaluate from that the sheets as part of our reporting back to our donors. So we can see how many children are targeted, how many teachers are facilitating the program, and as well as the volunteers in the community.
All right, and this program, like you said, is sponsored or funded by a donor, which in this case is the OFC. Just tell us a little bit about that. How much does it cost, or what would be the budget for running a program like this over, say, a period of 12 months or maybe 6 or however long that you plan these things for?
Yes, actually, a work plan was established. Because it's a pilot phase and only targeting 20 schools, we had a budget almost up to not over 200,000.
Kina,
yes. Okay. Probably it can go up as we progress and have good reporting, then it can go up a little bit higher than that.
I guess reporting is crucial to ensuring that the funding continues for programs like this. So reporting, what does that actually entail? What does it involve, reporting?
Okay, the reporting is based on its the PNG work plan itself. So the activities are training provided to the teachers and volunteers, and also the facilitators are the teachers providing the learning to the children participating. Then we see the number of the children participating and also the teachers being taught by the facilitators of PNGFA instructors. So we see that it's a success when they are rolling out the programs, and then we report on that. And it's done, hopefully, that we complete the 20 schools in implementing the program.
All right, Christine, thank you so much for your time. Sarah and Dean, it's back to you in the studio.
Great to hear from Christine and Peter on the ground in PNG. Just Play sounds like an incredible program and something that's really important for the schools over there.
Yeah, it's great to be able to create pathways and get kids into soccer, structured program where they can learn, but also for volunteers and instructors to learn how to deliver the program so that they can continue pathways. So growing the game of soccer in PNG is very positive, and good that the Oceania Football Confederation is supporting it.
Well said.
Can you be more Pacific? Keeping it social.
All right, Hollis, time for Keeping It Social. What have you found on the Instagrams, Facebook, Twitters, YouTubes of the world?
YouTube. I haven't been on YouTube for a while.
Oh, my God. I froth YouTube.
I did go on the other day because I noticed that a lot of pet owners probably notice this, but my dog goes nuts when he sees animals on TV. So I just went on YouTube and put up like animal, just played looping animal videos, and he just stood there. It was just, anyway. That's my story about socials.
Thanks.
I found on Instagram, the Storm Instagram, Brandon Smith has got his 100th game coming up this week, and his teammates got up and performed a haka for him. So obviously a mark of respect, and done on important occasions, and they showed the respect to Brandon by performing the haka, and the likes of Nelson Asafa Solomona, Kenny Bromwich, Remus Smith was in there, and Brandon performed alongside them as in response, and it was just pretty cool.
Going there! Going there!
really spine-tingling stuff.
Always love it. And I just read through the comments and seen that some people made mention of Nelson's footwear of choice, which was a nice pair of Crocs.
I rate that.
You rate it?
I rate it.
Yeah.
I want to get some and put some clips on them because you can get clips and they light up when you walk. Vibes.
Yeah, I might get a matching pair. That
sounds
pretty
cool. Oh my god, should we?
Matching light up Crocs.
Yeah, let's do it. I'm about it.
Sweet. What's your one for this week, Sarah?
My one this week comes from the ABC Sport Instagram. There was a little girl at a Yankees game who was doing the bottle flip challenge, and it obviously attracted a crowd. First attempt, doesn't get it. Second attempt, nearly but not so quite. Third attempt, it lands.
She's very cute.
She's so cute. She's sitting there in between the crowd, and she's obviously drawn attention to herself. She's given it a crack, a couple times. Doesn't get it, and then when she does, everyone just gets up, and all you hear is a "Let's go!" I love it. Some wholesome footage for us this week.
Very wholesome. Can you bottle flip?
No, I suck.
Yeah, me too.
I'm not actually really good at a lot of things, to be honest. The only thing going for me is the gift of my gab.
And you win lots of rugby games too.
Yeah, that too. And I burn garlic bread. Winner.
In the ruck. Tackling the tough headlines in sport on Can You Be More Pacific?
Starting our news off in the ruck, Mary Fowler. She is a Matildas gun, 19 years old, previously played with Montpellier and has just signed a 4-year deal with Manchester City.
Yeah, Mary Fowler, she's from Papua New Guinea, or she's got Papua New Guinean heritage, I should say. She's debuted for the Matildas at 15 years of age, scored 7 goals in 24 matches. So she's an out-and-out gun, and to be picked up by a powerhouse like Manchester City is great for her career. And she's still so young, but she's getting to go over and play in one of the premier competitions in the world.
It's super impressive. When she took to press to announce her news, she said, "I'm really excited and proud to be joining this club. It's a team that I've always wanted to play for, so I'm honoured to have this opportunity."
So good luck to Mary as she heads over there. Now on to rugby. The All Blacks have been hit by COVID ahead of their matches with Ireland.
Yes, it's really unfortunate. This COVID thing is still lingering and affecting sport in the way that it has. But their coach, Ian Foster, and two of their assistant coaches, plus Will Jordan, will be not present at the match this weekend due to COVID. Richard Mwanga, he has also missed out on training throughout the week due to a stomach bug, but thankfully it's not COVID. And Joe Smith, he gets the call up, who was the former coach of the Irish team, to come into the fold. So the All Blacks hit by COVID. Will this be enough to keep such a formidable side down, though?
Yeah, well, Foster mentioned that he's still confident in the team's ability. They've planned for, should this happen, how they deal with it, and it's playing out now. So I think they'll still be good, but wait and see.
I think that it'll be no effect.
No effect. The All Blacks roll on.
Their legacy continues. But no, I'm actually really looking forward to that test match, so time will tell how that unfolds. Continuing with rugby, World Rugby has changed or made changes to their concussion protocols.
Yeah, they've introduced a mandatory stand down period of 12 days. Now, this is something that the AFL has in place in terms of a mandatory stand down period for certain criteria or categories of head knocks. And the World Rugby governing body has announced the changes themselves. Now, this is something that's making news around the world for collision sports around mandatory stand down periods. And they're taking that approach because they obviously they actually had some recent meetings, international meetings with a whole bunch of key stakeholders to come up with a decision. And yeah, the rules will look at the categories or the criteria and also a player's concussion history, and they'll determine the length of time that they'll stand down. And obviously they'll be using independent concussion consultants as well on all those cases.
Necessary protocol, all with safety, athlete safety in front of mind.
Definitely front of mind. Over to the NRL, and the Warriors have finally returned home.
Yes, and the emotions were running high. We know that the Warriors have been here in Australia for 2.5 years, which means that they haven't had the opportunity to go back to Mount Smart and play in front of their fans. That also means that they've spent time away from their families. The likes of Sean Johnson has watched his 2-year-old daughter grow up through FaceTime, which has been far from ideal. So you can only imagine the emotions of being able to return back, not only to New Zealand, but to be amongst family and friends, and they were warmly embraced by staff and family alike.
Yeah, it's wonderful to see, and we wish the Warriors the best. They've had a tough season in terms of their results, so hopefully that return home, being in a place that a lot of the players, you know, is their home for them, that might get them some results. And they take on the Tigers at Mount Smart Stadium this Sunday in that return match. It's also Beanie for Brain Cancer Round in the NRL, the Mark Hughes Foundation, who partnered up with the NRL a number of years ago to help raise important funds for research and into brain cancer. Mark Hughes, a former player with the Newcastle Knights, represented New South Wales. He was a sufferer of brain cancer, and he started this foundation to try and eradicate or try and help families that are suffering from it. And he continues to drive it forward, as I said, in partnership with the NRL and Channel 9, also a really big contributor as well. Matt Callender, a former producer with Channel 9, particularly on their football coverage, who unfortunately lost his life to brain cancer. So great cause. Go out and buy a beanie from the Mark Hughes Foundation.
You're wearing one right now.
I'm wearing one right now. I think they're aiming for, I'm going to say, 3 million, I think, is their target this year in sales. And they tend to hit the mark almost every year. It's really popular. And look forward to seeing the players run out to start every game with their beanies on.
ABC Radio Australia. Can you be more Pacific?
Hala, that's all we have time for.
It is. If you missed the show or you just want to listen to the magic again, it'll be replayed on Friday, 2 p.m. PNG time. We can find all our episodes on the Radio Australia website or wherever you listen to your podcasts.
Moi there.
It's all Kia.
Can You Be More Pacific? An ABC sport production for ABC Radio Australia.
This program has been funded by the Department of Foreign Affairs and Trade.